You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
What's this button do? Whoa!
You are now entering the green world.
Whaling has had a continued impact on whale populations in the South Pacific, with over 2 million whales lost to historical industrial whaling. Whale populations are seeing some population recovery since Soviet whaling ended in the 1970s. New techniques are allowing scientists to study the age structures, behaviours and songs of whales, and observe how these are changing as whale populations are recovering. Wire producer Liam spoke to Associate Professor Emma Carroll of the University of Auckland School of Biological Sciences about the large study they conducted on a population of New Caledonian humpback whales, looking at their changing behaviours and population dynamics across nearly 20 years.
Your study focused on a population of humpback whales. What has been the impact of whaling on humpback whale populations, as well as the wider marine ecosystem?
Whaling had a massive impact on our southern oceans. So there were about 2 million whales killed during industrial whaling. So that's a huge number of animals and predators to take out of an ecosystem. Humpback whales were targeted kind of late in the game in a way. They were hunted by industrial whaling mainly at last century, so 1920s onwards to 1970s. So compared to other species, it was really the development of the industrial whaling boats that really led to them being killed and hunted in huge numbers. And we focused on New Caledonia, which is part of the Oceania population, which historically numbered maybe 15,000 humpbacks before whaling, but declined to maybe 200 due to, whaling, particularly illegal Soviet whaling, which took tens of thousands south of New Zealand and Oceania in the 60s and 70s. And so it really was quite indiscriminate. So they took all ages, males and females, and it was just a huge, huge loss to the population.
What were the main findings of your research with regards to the changing population structure and behaviours of whales and the lasting impacts of whaling?
So there's two things we looked at, and the first thing is age structure. Aging, or estimating age in whales, is actually pretty hard. Historically, they used to have to kill them, and whales are kind of like trees. If you look at their earplugs, they have rings that indicate growth. Now, obviously, these days we don't do that, right? So we've got to find other ways of estimating how old a whale is. And to do that, we used what are called epigenetic markers. So epigenetics is like the formatting on the book of DNA. And some of this formatting changes predictably with time, and so forms what we call an epigenetic clock. We used an epigenetic clock approach to estimate how old the whales in the population were. And so we had a time series of about 20 years, which is, amazing. And that's testament to the long-term work of our colleagues in New Caledonia at Operation Cetaces and IRD. In the first part, we estimated the age of males. And in the first half of that study, we see what's called a left-skewed distribution. And it's left-skewed because there's lots and lots of young animals. And that's what you expect, because when a population is recovering, very small, it's going to grow, have lots of young animals come into the population. Females are going to have lots of babies. And then in the second decade of our study, what we see is those animals getting older. And so we see what's called a more balanced age structure. So less young animals, more older animals. It's what we expect to see. It's what we want to see. We see that population getting older and recovering from whaling. So that was really cool. And it also agreed with previous work done at Rangitahua in the Kermadec in East Australia, showing this population has lots of, the Southern Hemisphere has lots of young animals. I think that was really interesting. What we then did is we looked at how often those males in the population were involved in mating behaviours and how often they had offspring. And we looked at that in relation to their age in those two different parts of the time series. And what we see is in the first part of the time series, when the population has lots of young animals and some older animals. It doesn't really matter how old you are. You've got an equal chance of being present in those mating behaviours. And humpbacks are really cool. So they do a couple of different mating tactics. You know, they like to change it up. So some of them sing. They have them one of the most complex vocal displays in the animal kingdom. Every male sings the same song, but that song will change over time. So you might get song evolutions, where it changes a little bit each year, or song revolutions, where it completely changes from year to year. And, you know, it's whatever the kind of the banger of the year is, those whales will all adopt it. And so that's like one really important mating behaviour. And the other one is what we call primary escorts. So in humpback wintering grounds, you'll get one female and then maybe one or a couple of males. And so those males are basically fighting each other to get next to the female to have the opportunity to breed. The one closest to the female is called the primary escort. And we think that that male has the best chance of having a mating opportunity with that female. So singers and primary escorts were basically found across young and old males, as you might expect based on how many old and young males there are in the population in the first half of the study. That was really cool for a couple of reasons. Now, I'm a geneticist, and to me, that shows that it's actually kind of great for the diversity in the genetics in the population, because if all males have the same chance of having offspring, it means all of those genes have an equal chance of getting through to the next generation. And it could just be because there weren't that many animals, and so females were just mating with whoever they could find. Now, it kind of flips in the second half of the study when the population is recovering and we see more animals around. Those mating behaviours, the singers and primary escorts, are more likely to be older males. That might be because they've had more practice. You know, it might take more experience to learn how, or you might need to be bigger to be able to muscle your way next to the female in a competitive group. It might be that as you age or you get more experience, you get better at singing. We don't really know, you know, so we just kind of speculating at this point. But we also see that those older males are also more likely to have offspring. And so that's really interesting as well, because, you know, this is a more competitive environment now, right? On wintering grounds for humpback whales, there's usually two males to every female. And that's because females will stay on the feeding grounds and eat more to get in better condition to have babies. And so what we think is happening is there's more competition, females are becoming more choosy, and it may be that males that are bigger or have more experience, females have a preference for them. And you can see how that might be advantageous. You know, if it's more, there's more competition, those females might want their babies to be bigger and stronger, to be more competitive in the future as well.
What do these changing population-dependent behaviours say about the resilience and adaptability of whale populations?
So I think this shows that whaling casts a long shadow. So, you know, it's half a century after whaling finished and we're still seeing changes in the population. But I think it also shows that these populations are able to cope with changes, and what they seem to be showing us is when the population is at low levels, the whales do things that seem to be good for them, right? They're going to take mating opportunities when they can, and it seems to increase diversity or maintain diversity. But over time, those things are changing and they're potentially getting back to more what they were like before whaling, you know, more competition between males and more older males having more reproductive success.
And do we see similar patterns of population-dependent sexual selection in other species?
There isn't a huge amount of work done in other whale species because it's been so hard to estimate the age of these animals in the past. And in terms of other species, you do see similar patterns, but again, not a lot of work has been done. It's really because of the changing technology, the ability to estimate age using this epigenetic approach, that we're actually being able to look at these questions. That combined with the fact that our colleagues in New Caledonia have this amazing time series that we can work with them on studying these whales.
What do you hope future research might lead to in this space? Is there more techniques that might lead to answering more questions?
Absolutely. So this work was led by our PhD student, Franca, and she also looked at hormone levels. When you collect a small skin sample from a whale, which we did for this work, sometimes you collect a little bit of what's called blubber or fat, and you can actually extract hormones from that fat. And so testosterone is a really important hormone across mammals, and it is linked to reproduction. So she's been measuring hormone levels in their fat as well, and to link that to different mating behaviours. And we're also looking at their song to see if there's any particular song that's more sexy, or some characteristics of that song. Is it more complex? Because in birds, sometimes it's if you can sing a really complex song, then you're, those males are more attractive to females.
How can this research be used to inform conservation efforts and whale population recovery?
I guess it's always important for us to remember that the moratorium on whaling was a huge conservation success. You know, we've seen whale populations bounce back all around the world, and it's amazing. But we also need to realise these populations continue to change. Populations will recover, they change how they use their environment, and they're changing how they're interacting with each other. And that has important implications. So I guess it's a way of saying that we should keep monitoring them so we can keep learning about their biology, but also how whaling continues to impact them, because it has implications for other hunted species as well.
Well, thank you very much for that. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
This was a huge collaborative project between colleagues in New Caledonia, the University of St Andrews and the University of Auckland, led by my PhD student, Franca Eichenberger.
That was the University of Auckland's Associate Professor Emma Carroll on the continued effects of whaling on humpback whales.
That was The Green World.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.